The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum from Accelerated Government Strategies, providing advisory consulting for innovative startups to help grow government revenue. Every week, Aileen and Gigi welcome Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives who are taking risks to engineer success and shape the future. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now your hosts, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today, our guest is Neelu Razi Howe, Chief Strategy Officer of RSA. Neelu has been a venture capitalist and an operator in the technology industry for the past 25 years, with a focus on security market for the past 12. She graduated from Columbia College with a BA in English Literature and a law degree from Harvard.
Neelu, let's start with your role today. Tell us a little bit about what you do at RSA as the Chief Strategy Officer.
So I joined RSA about a year ago, and what the strategy organization is in charge of is what I call the corporate roadmap. So we have product roadmaps, we have very well-defined plans and strategies across the business units at RSA. The goal with the corporate roadmap is really to bring all of that together, and as we look forward over the next 3 to 5 years and what we want to accomplish as a company, make sure that we're completely aligned from a business perspective. So do we have the right resources? Do we have the right strategies? Are there ways we can accelerate our goals through partnerships, through acquisitions? And so the pieces of the organization that fall into the strategy group include the planning function, business development, corporate development.
And so, you know, we will often say that cybersecurity today literally is an arms race. And so I can imagine that trying to set the corporate strategy is challenging. What's the biggest challenge that you face?
Well, we're competing in an incredibly dynamic market. There's no market out there that looks like ours. First of all, there's 1,500 companies that we compete in. And if you look at enterprise software, there's simply no other market that has 1,500 competitors, 30 some odd sub-segments. That's dynamic with the needs of our customers changing so rapidly. As a big company, it's critical to be adaptive in that sort of market. And the great thing about RSA that makes it unique is despite its rich multi-decade history, it's been around for a long time. We have 30,000 customers. We're large. We're profitable. We continue innovating and bringing new products and capabilities to market. So the biggest challenge for all of us who compete in the cybersecurity market is really to anticipate the changing needs of our customers, to change to the threat landscape as it evolves, and really be adaptive and nimble.
One of the, I think, things that a lot of people say about the cyber industry is that the big companies don't innovate like they used to, and they've grown mainly through acquisition, that the innovation is happening at small startups. Do you see that, or is RSA still able to innovate given their size?
There's no question that the startup community serves an incredibly important role in every market. Their ability to be very fast using the most current technologies and not have to support the customer base gives them an advantage over companies that are well established. That's true for every single market. So RSA continues to innovate. We're really excited about the capabilities we're bringing to market, really driving a business-driven security perspective across the product portfolio, whether that's our NetWitness portfolio that addresses advanced threats, the GRC portfolio with Archer, our identity portfolio, our fraud portfolio. The product roadmaps in each of those areas include some really amazing advancements that both the market is requiring and we think is necessary to deal with the evolving threat landscape. Having said that, there are some great companies out there really disrupting the way organizations think about it. So there will always be a place for doing acquisitions. But that doesn't mean that the big enterprise security vendors shouldn't innovate in their own product roadmaps. You have to in order to stay relevant.
Today, our guest is Neelu Razi Howe, Chief Strategy Officer of RSA. So, Nilo, we will continue to talk about cyber and later in the interview, but I would like to take a step back. Let's talk about the beginning of your journey. First off, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Iran. I was born and raised in Tehran, Iran.
How did your, you know, leaving your family and leaving your country behind influence you in your formative years?
Well, there's no question that it completely changed how I approach everything I do. So as a 10-year-old, I was given 2 days to say goodbye to everyone I know. I went on a plane, put in a boarding school in England, which was a completely different experience on so many dimensions than anything I'd been used to. And in fact, when I got to that boarding school, there wasn't room for me because it was already the fall. So I lived in the attic of the boarding school. It's straight out of a sort of Dickens novel. And then when it was pretty clear that the revolution was not a short-term event, but that it was going to continue, I moved to the States, and that ended up being a completely different experience as well. So what I learned from that is a lot of people, when they look at these changes, would think that it would be overwhelming, but it actually empowered me to not worry about, not be afraid, to look at risk from a completely different lens than a lot of people do. It helped me see that with every risk you take, there can be tremendous opportunity and it's worth embracing it. Just changed my approach professionally in terms of looking at opportunities and risks and embracing them when they make sense, as opposed to being afraid of them.
So back in the late 70s, my dad was the Iranian project manager, and that was before the revolution. And I remember we had several high-level, you know, general officers at our house for dinner quite often when we lived in St. Louis. And after the revolution occurred, several of them weren't alive anymore. So that must have been, you know, your whole world changed.
Yeah. So my experiences, and I hope anyone who listens to the TED Talk knows this, is I was lucky in what happened to me. And that's why I call it the gift of exile. I went through this as a 10-year-old when I was still incredibly adaptable and could go through the change and internalize it and really turn it into a positive experience. It didn't happen to me as a 30-40-year-old when you know you're much more set in your ways, and it became a very positive experience for me. The hardships, the real hardships that people went through in the revolution was amazing, and many people didn't survive. Even to this day, there continues to be a lot of folks who are suffering through the current environment there.
You fast forward and you look at the refugees coming out of Syria right now, and this nation is just in a different point in time of being more receptive to that. Do you have any words of wisdom to somebody, another 10-year-old out there that may be faced with a similar but even more daunting challenge?
So let me say a couple things about that, which is important, because the political conversation around immigrants and refugees has really gone in a interesting direction. The thing people sometimes lose sight of is the amazing power that immigrants can bring to a society. And there's a lot of studies that show this. Immigrants think differently than people who are born in countries. That can be a huge asset. And when you look at the United States and look at the value created by immigrants, it's amazing. 40% of Fortune 500 companies were started by immigrants or their children. Immigrants take risks. They're not afraid. There's no choice almost than to take those risks in order to be successful, because you don't have a fallback position. So there's an amazing power to allowing immigrants to come into a country. And so much of our innovation and so much of our economic growth has been driven by immigrants, and we can't lose sight of that. We do need to have the right policies in place. We need to have the right process in place for doing that. We have to watch out for our national security interests. There's no question. This is a very, very complicated topic, and it requires real conversation and not soundbite discussion, which is how it's happening today. And there's a balance that we have to achieve.
Nilu, you mentioned that you were lucky, and you were. One of the things that you got to do was you got to get the benefit of a great American education, and you took advantage of that. But the interesting thing when I read your background is you majored in English literature for your undergrad, and then you went on to get a law degree. And if I looked at somebody whose title was Chief Strategy Officer at one of the largest cybersecurity companies in the world, I don't know that I would have thought that would have been the educational background. So how did you decide to major in English literature and then go on to get a law degree? And what did you think you were going to do with those degrees?
Wow, if only I could go back into my thinking way back then. So the reason I majored in English literature is because I love reading and I love literature. And my decision as in undergrad was do what you love. And I had no idea where that was going to take me. I graduated college when I was 20 years old. I thought I might be a, writer, film writer. I thought I could be a lawyer. I still thought I could be a doctor. I used to code as a kid. So I actually wrote my own games. And I'll just sort of have a geek moment here. When I first came to the States, the computer lab was actually my friend. So I was 12, 13 years old, really trying to figure out how to assimilate. And there was this computer lab. I went to an all-girls school. There was no one else in the computer lab. So I actually went in there and taught myself how to code and wrote my own Dungeons and Dragons game. So that's how much of a nerd I was back then. Being an English lit major and loving technology is not, they're not mutually exclusive. So I loved both and I loved reading and that's what I wanted to study. It actually hadn't crossed my mind to apply to the engineering school, oddly. But the thing I'll say about the cybersecurity industry is we need innovation in this industry. There's no question about that, right? We are facing systemic failure. When you have 70, 90, 100% breach rates, there's no question that the industry is failing. And in order to innovate, we need to have diversity. We need to have diversity of background. We need to have diversity of experience. We need to have diverse thinking and problem-solving processes. So we don't just need folks who understand computer science and data science. We need graphic artists. We need lawyers who understand policy. We need business people who know how to build businesses. I think one of the most damaging things to our industry is the image of that, hacker in a hoodie, the misanthropic, tattooed hacker that's out there, because this industry needs a whole new group of folks to come into it and build sustainable businesses. And we need a whole bunch of different backgrounds. So hopefully looking forward 10 years, it won't be so unusual to have a CEO, a chief strategy officer, chief marketing officer, head of services, head of sales, who comes at it with a degree in humanities and not with a comp sci degree.
Today, our guest is Nilu Razi Howe, Chief Strategy Officer at RSA. Coming up, we'll hear about Nilu's early career. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Nilu Razi Howe, Chief Strategy Officer at RSA. So, Nilu, I got to ask you, you practiced law for a few years, and then you kind of made a big jump. You joined McKinsey, which traditionally is, an advisory type firm. So tell us about that transition. What made you make that decision, and what was your focus at McKinsey?
One of the things that happened to me when I was a lawyer is that I was loaned out to one of our clients to actually work in their legal department, but focus on resolving a lot of business and strategy issues for them. And when I was doing that work, I just realized how much I loved dealing with the business questions at hand. So much so that I considered going back to business school, and I was talking to a friend of mine who was at McKinsey, and his answer was, hey, don't go back to business school. Come interview at McKinsey, because if you get a job here, we'll basically train you and you'll get paid instead of having to pay. So I went through the interview process, and there were a few things that really impressed me about McKinsey at the time. First, as a woman, there was a distinct difference between the female partners at law firms and the female partners at McKinsey. All of the female partners at McKinsey who I interviewed with had kids, almost all of them. And that wasn't true at a law firm. And it just seemed like McKinsey really embraced enabling and empowering people to have full lives. I won't use the word balanced lives because that just doesn't exist, but to have full lives and understood the importance of having diversity at McKinsey. And so they created a path for people, men and women, to be able to have those lives without having to drop out of the profession. Second, the questions just were fascinating to me. And it was the first step in realizing that what I really enjoyed was the change and transformation process that comes with strategic thinking. And that really became apparent as I researched and interviewed and talked to folks at McKinsey. So once I was lucky enough to get the offer to join the firm, it was a no-brainer for me to go over. And despite the fact that I was leaving my legal career behind, it just seemed like a great opportunity.
No, if I was to describe you, I would describe you as fearless. I mean, you come on. I mean, you've been extremely successful in two very male-dominated industries, venture capital and cybersecurity. But tell me what gives you that inner strength?
Well, okay, to be clear, I did not purposefully seek out industries that were male-dominated. It just happened that I keep finding myself in these industries that are male dominated. But, you know, I grew up, I have two brothers. I'm kind of stuck in the middle of two very strong brothers. Having gone through what I went through as a kid, really dealing with industries that aren't as friendly to women or as embracing of women is not a big deal. You just keep doing it. So what I always from a life philosophy perspective, I love skiing, absolutely love skiing. And the thing that gives me peace of mind is to go into the trees. And when you're tree skiing, your skis go where your eyes go. So if you focus on the trees and the rocks, you're going to end up wrapped around them. But if you focus on the path, you're going to make it through. So just keep your eyes on the path. The obstacles are what they are. You ignore them and you do what you're supposed to do and you'll make it through. I find that applies in life just as well as it applies in skiing.
Today, our guest is Neelu Razi Howe, Chief Strategy Officer at RSA. So, Neelu, what specifically inspired your interest in cybersecurity? I mean, obviously, it's an incredibly growing field that's been growing for a while. But what made you want to really hone in on cyber?
So if you look at my career path, I realize it can look a little frenetic, but there is some logic to it. When 9/11 happened, my husband and I both were woken up by our phone ringing, friends calling actually from Europe. We were in California at the time. And we turned on the TV and we watched as everyone else did in horror as the events of that day unfolded. And we both decided we wanted to figure out how to serve and really how to create a world that was safe and secure for our children. He ended up going and working in the White House. I ended up being lucky enough to get recruited to run the investment teams for Paladin Capital Group, which is a venture fund that's started by the former head of the CIA, former head of NSA, former deputy director of DARPA, amongst other folks. And I was astounded that they hired me because my background in investment had to do with media tech and retail companies. It had nothing to do with security. My belief, though, was 9/11 was a seminal moment in security and not much had happened in the industry until that moment, and that a whole bunch of change was going to happen, and I would be able to get up that learning curve. So my first move to national security was with Paladin. The aperture for investments were really broad, and a piece of that was cyber. Over the 10 years that I was at Paladin, cyber became more and more important, and its strategic importance to the world, to governments, to businesses, really started escalating. And what I believed was if you weren't in the field, really getting your hands dirty and understanding how to build a business in that space, your relevance wasn't going to be there. So I wanted to get back to being an entrepreneur and I wanted to work on the hardest problem that we faced as a country, and that was cyber. So that's why I left Paladin, which is an amazing place, and went to Endgame, which at the time was a startup in the cybersecurity space.
So earlier you talked about the richness diversity brings to a cybersecurity team. I also watched listened to another podcast that you did, and you talked about the looming cybersecurity industry implosion. And if you just, it's just plain numbers. If we don't start recruiting across the board from our population, our smartest, our best and brightest into STEM, especially cyber related degrees, we're going to have almost a shortage, a national security shortage of expertise in this area. So how do you think we can help attract, you know, especially young women into these degrees? I loved your imagery of somebody with a hoodie doing evil things, and women like to make a difference. So how do you think we can help get that word across?
Yeah. So here's what's amazing, right? It's one of the biggest national security issues we face. Very mission driven, which applies to all sorts of folks, including women. We have negative unemployment rates, right? Right now, the shortage is about 500,000 people for this industry. So it's an amazing industry to be coming into. That shortage is only going to grow over time. And so just from a career perspective and you know, commanding good professional rates, this is an amazing industry to come into. And we are regressive when it comes to women and minorities in this industry. Women and minorities are leaving. And we have to solve that problem if we want to drive innovation at the rate it needs to be driven to solve the problems we need to solve in order to be successful. And we will be, we have to be successful in this mission. So I think a lot of it has to do with changing the image. Right now, if you look at how TV shows portray cyber folks, right, you look at Mr. Robot. That's not an image that really appeals to a 13-year-old girl. So we've got to get out there. By the way, there's a lot of phenomenal women who work in this industry who could be amazing mentors, can be amazing role models for young women. And we've got to celebrate them. That's been true throughout history. I actually wrote a blog about this. There are a lot of amazing women who've really innovated in very important ways. And I think if we can start celebrating them, showing that this is an industry that's important and embracing of women, then we'll do a better job. We've got to change the image of the prototypical person who works in this industry.
You said women are leaving this industry. How, you know, we're doing everything we can to attract them in. What do you think is causing that hemorrhaging of women leaving?
Well, so it's regressive, which means as the industry grows, fewer and fewer women relatively are coming into it. Again, it's interesting. This wasn't purposeful on my part, but the two industries I've worked in most recently, venture capital and cybersecurity, are regressive when it comes to women. A lot of that is cultural, and it becomes a negative cycle as the ratio of women to men goes down over time. It just becomes harder to recruit women in. I do think women like to see women in companies that they go into. They like to see women in leadership positions. And they want to know that, you know, they're welcome in the workplace. So companies simply have to embrace this as an important strategic priority, not because it's a social good, but because the industry needs it in order to be successful. I would love to see us get to a place where we're publishing statistics, where we're owning the statistics, and that gives the message that it matters throughout the recruiting process, that we start demanding pipelines that are diverse in our recruiting process. I think you have to hire the best person. There's no question about it. But your pipeline needs to be diverse. You need to be interviewing, a broad group of folks. And that's really the only way that we're going to get there. But we can get there. I mean, I have faith. In every other way, women are breaking every barrier there is. We'll do it on our own. If we don't have sort of the power of society behind us, we'll figure out how to do it. And we'll get there. This matters too much not to.
Today, our guest is Neelu Razi Howe, Chief Strategy Officer at RSA. Coming up, we'll ask Neelu about mentors. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Nilo Razi Howe, Chief Strategy Officer at RSA.
So, Nilo, typically, you know, Aileen and I both came from high-tech environments, and typically what you find is people who either love to work in small, fast-paced startup environments or those that prefer working for larger tech organizations with all the kind of diversity of problems and challenges and strategies that they face. So you've managed to navigate working for a large employer as well as small startups. Which do you prefer?
They both have, they're both fascinating, interesting places to work with different sets of problems, like you said. I actually enjoy, I enjoy both. What drives my decision making has more to do with people and the type of problem we're trying to solve and whether that's a problem I can really add value to solving rather than whether it's a big company or a small company. I've been incredibly lucky in my career to have worked with amazing teams. You're absolutely right. You said it the right way. At a startup, it's every day is existential. You're trying to disrupt a market. You're trying to displace incumbents. You're working furiously around the clock. You never have enough resources, and you believe in what you're doing. In a big company, you have a massive customer base that you have to support while you try and grow and adapt to the market that the young companies are disrupting. You have a lot of challenges trying to balance that innovation with the big customer base that you have. And it's a great problem to embrace. So I've actually enjoyed both. And like I said, my decision making tends to be driven more by the type of problem that's trying to be solved and the team that's there to work with.
So speaking of teams, we always ask about mentoring. So have you had any special mentors in your career?
I have been really lucky to have some amazing people who've been huge advocates in my career. Most recently, at Paladin Capital Group, I was very lucky to be working with General Ken Minahan, former director of the NSA, and his guidance, his support, his humor, his sort of no-holds-barred approach to telling me when I was doing things right and wrong. As I came to Washington to embrace this new challenge, working with the federal government and the intelligence community, which I had zero background in, without him, I would have fallen flat on my face. So I'm really lucky to have had people of that caliber to work and advise me as I went through my journey.
So Nilo, again, we talked about the fact that you're in two very male-dominated industries. What is the biggest challenge that you have faced in your career?
Well, the biggest challenge really is how to recruit, retain, and motivate talented people who have lots of opportunities and lots of options. So in the industries that I've worked in, your talent base walks out of the office and into the elevator every single day, and really focusing on how to make sure that they are not just productive, but that their needs are being met and they find the work to be and the work environment to be a place they want to be is always the biggest challenge. And by the way, across the board, recruiting great talent is really hard. It's something you have to commit yourself to and really set time aside. And it's so easy to shortchange that. And then once they're there, onboarding them properly, starting from day one, doesn't happen enough. And then making sure through their journey in your company that they are being challenged and their needs are being met in the right way is always hard.
So you're a woman, you're of Iranian heritage. Have you ever faced any unconscious bias through your career?
I'm sure I have, but the whole point of unconscious bias is, you know, you're not always aware of it. Like I said, I don't tend to focus on the issues and misperceptions people might have because I'm Iranian or because I'm a woman. I just try and get the job done and be as absolutely effective as I can be.
Today, our guest is Nilo Razi Howe, Chief Strategy Officer at RSA. the Lean In org, as well as your old employer, McKinsey, just a couple weeks ago released a study that showed that women have been leaning in and have been asking for promotions, raises, job opportunities, challenging work assignments, and have been being told no. And one of the, I think the highlights or lowlights on your, depending on your perspective of the study for me, was that a statistic that showed that women are facing obstacles getting that first promotion, that even when at the start of the pipeline, it's pretty balanced between the number of men and women, by the time that they get that first promotion into management, that's where the gap really starts to show and then gets worse as you climb up the corporate ladder. What do you think that we can do to help reverse that trend?
So a couple of thoughts. First, there's no question, in my experience, leaning in hasn't ever been the issue. The women who, at every stage, from junior to senior, there's plenty of women who are leaning in, working hard, making demands appropriately and reasonably, and with varying success. And there's no question that unconscious bias plays a huge role in this. And that's the issue we have to get at, is the perverse impact of unconscious bias in all aspects of life. The professional is part of it, but by the way, girls and STEM and education is a huge part of it too. There's a great book called Whistling Vivaldi that explores the concept of unconscious bias and how it impacts performance, actually, even. Clearly training is a piece of this. And there's now a lot of companies that are embracing really training to get unconscious bias, to get at the issue of unconscious bias. Having more women, attracting women into the industry, especially into the cyber industry, matters, because you're less likely to have an unconscious bias toward a woman if you are a woman. So having female managers and promoting them. And again, it's not just about social good here. This is about performance. The Kauffman Foundation has done a lot of studies on the importance of diversity and has shown that companies perform better when teams are diverse, that boards perform better when teams are diverse. So if we want to be the highest performing team we can be, we need to have diversity at the table. And we've got to get at the root of this unconscious bias.
Neil, I'm going to switch the conversation a little bit. Networking has proven to be key to getting ahead. Networking resources are not clear to many women, and many women don't take the time because they're, you know, trying to find that balance of work and personal lives. Do you have any advice on how to network or how to leverage these resources out there for somebody who's trying to grow their career?
You just have to put yourself out there and really not be shy about it. There will be times when people say no, but reach out to folks, network within the company, go to industry events, network outside of company, be purposeful about your networking and what you're trying to accomplish. Even those of us who work in strategy, we're not very good about setting personal strategic objectives, but this is a place where you can set personal strategic objectives and think really through about the type of people you want to meet, how many you want to meet, the purpose of meeting them. I did this very purposefully when I was in venture capital, building a network in an industry that I was brand new to. There were categories of people I wanted to meet, and I set goals for myself by week, by month, by year, how many folks I wanted to meet in those categories and how I was going to go about meeting them and what the goal of it was and what I was bringing to the conversation. So you just have to be very purposeful about it and be polite about it. I mean, you need to have the right approach. So, you know, asking to go to a meal is very different than asking for a 30-minute phone call. One is very easy. One is very hard to do. Sending an email introduction, going to an event to network, again, is very different than asking for an hour and a half out of someone's day. So there's no question that networking is critical to building a professional career, and being purposeful and strategic about it can make a difference.
Have you mentored or do you have any mentors?
Both formally and informally. Actually, if I can just say one thing for a moment, I hate talking about myself, but something really cool happened this fall. So I actually received a cyber mentorship award, and I was nominated by a group of women from my former company. This was 9 months after I left the company, and for them to nominate me and then to get the award was one of the most special things that's happened in my career. It's absolute highlight for me. So I do believe in paying it forward. I do believe I've been lucky in my career to have had people who are advocates. I do think giving matters a lot. And actually, Adam Grant, who's a Wharton professor, his first book, Give and Take, shows that givers tend to do best in workplaces. And when you give, when you mentor, when you are open to helping other people, it comes back in spades. It's great validation. I mean, people should do it anyway. But when his book came out, it was nice to see that givers actually end up first as well.
Today, our guest is Neelu Razi Howe, Chief Strategy Officer at RSA. Coming up, we'll find out how Neelu balances it all. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Neelu Razi Howe, Chief Strategy Officer at RSA.
I'm going to ask you about work-life balance, which when I see all our guests cringe when we ask that question, because I know that it doesn't really exist. But you have this incredibly successful career. You're married. You have three children. How do you work at all?
Well, you're absolutely right when you say it doesn't exist. And you have to have you have to approach it with a sense of humor. There's no other way. So let me tell a quick story about work-life balance. Last year, I was taking the stage to give a talk, and my talk required a piece of relevant market information that I was waiting on. So I had my phone with me, which I never take on stage with me, but I'm waiting, and the phone buzzes, and I look down, and instead of the market information, it's a text from my son, my oldest son, and the text reads literally, "Mom, what's the best form of birth control?" Pause. In that moment, the 300 thoughts going through my head is, oh my God, do I run out of this room or do I keep walking to the stage? What is going on? I text him back, like, son, yeah, I've been gone for one day. Who are you with and what are you doing? And he writes back, Mom, I'm sorry. I have a report due in 5 minutes and I just need an answer. And I wrote back, context. You start with context. So I gave him my answer, which was, of course, abstinence. And continue walking on stage. But you're always, you know, it's just a question of what's dropping at any given time. Technology makes a difference. I've Skyped into parent-teacher conferences. I FaceTime with my kids when I'm on the road. I have closed deals in the bathroom of the elementary school while the school play is going on because we were running out of time. I've been on conference calls during the Halloween parade trying to hide the microphone with my hair so that the other parents didn't look at me with horror. It's not graceful, it's not pretty, but I try to make sure my kids understand why it is I'm working, why it matters, what the mission is. They're up to speed on it. They're with me on this journey, and we laugh about it a lot. We have very open communications, and we do the best we can.
Maybe those stories are what defines work-life balance in the
long run. Absolutely. It takes a village for sure.
Well, let's go talk to you about your value system. You know, we ask all of our guests at the close of the show, and if you were to go back to Neelu when she was, graduating from Harvard Law, what advice would you give her to help her be as successful and have a journey as you've had in today's world?
I've been reflecting on this question in the context of mentoring younger women. And the thing that always comes back to me is there is a gap for many women in terms of their competence and their confidence. And their confidence so often is well below their competence level, and they don't give themselves enough credit. They internalize their mistakes and their failures way too much. They tend to question whether they're qualified for jobs, for promotions, for opportunities. The advice I would give is be confident. You can do it. If an opportunity comes, don't question whether you're qualified for it. If it's come to you, there's a reason why it's come to you. I can't tell you the number of times, even after graduating law school, where a potential opportunity was put in front of me, and my first instinct was to question whether I was qualified for the opportunity, as opposed to take it for granted that I was qualified for the opportunity and really only focus on whether it was an opportunity that was exciting to me. So that, to me, really bolstering confidence, believing in yourself, not questioning whether you're qualified for something and only questioning whether it's something you want to be doing, is what I would hope to give to a younger version.
Today, our guest is Neelu Razi Howe, Chief Strategy Officer at RSA. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum, founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. Learn more about AGS and the work they do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday afternoons at 1 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.